Mount Everest. Also, the first woman to climb what is referred to as the seven summits, the seven highest peaks on each of the seven continents. So, happy birthday, Junko Tabe. Today is also, excuse me, I've had problems here. Testing, okay. Today is, I was gonna say it's Murphy's birthday based on everything that's going wrong. Today is also the second in the series of six for our Vision Summit series. We are using the story of Moses when he stopped to climb Mount Nebo as he was leading the people of God on the journey to the Promised Land as a background to this series. The Vision Summit series is an opportunity to find encouragement in our life together, to discern God's direction for the future, and to learn how to pass on the torch of faith to the next generation. Our first scripture reading is taken from the book of Numbers. Numbers 13, starting with verse 31. But the other men who had explored the land with him disagreed. We can't go up against them. They're stronger than we are. So they spread this bad report about the land among the Israelites. The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers, and that's what they thought too. And from Philippians, I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Jesus Christ. Modern mountain climbing provides many helpful analogies for the life and mission of the church. Climbing is a group effort. The climbers are part of a larger team, most of whom do not make the actual climb, but nonetheless are essential for and benefit from a successful climb. Now, you may be the spiritual equivalent of a climber or a sponsor, or an outfitter, or support staff, or something like that. But what is needed is that we work together as a team in order to have a successful expedition as the people of God. Mountain climbing is carried out in stages. The first stage is choosing the peak. We need to know where we're going. We examined that stage last week. The second stage involves surveying the mountain. What are the challenges that will be faced? What are the problems that need to be overcome? What is the best route to take? Altitude, sickness, temperature, weather, potential falls, hidden crevices, steep inclines, avalanches, and managing supplies are among the many issues that need to be addressed in addressing a climb, in preparing for a climb. That's the purpose of the survey. Now, on the journey of faith, we also face many challenges. As the people of God seeking to serve Jesus Christ, there are many problems to overcome on this spiritual expedition. Now, what would a survey of the religious landscape in America look like? A survey of the current situation in America. The good news is that most Americans identify as Christians. The bad news is that number is dropping at a significant rate. In 2007, Pew Research found that 8 out of 10 Americans identified as Christians. 10 years later, the number is down to 7 out of 10. A growing number of Americans have given up on God. They have become nuns. That's N-O-N-E-S. Not to be confused with the female members of a religious order within the Roman Catholic Church. That's spelled N-U-N-S. I don't know how they're doing, but the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, are increasing. And this is a term that has been popularized by Pew Research, which does opinion poll and demographic studies. In 2007, the Pew Religious Landscape Study found that 16% of the population claimed no religious affiliation. A mere 10 years later, that number has grown to almost 25%. Mainline churches, which would include the United Methodist Church, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Episcopal Church, Presbyterian Church USA, American Baptist Churches, and the United Church of Christ, have seen a steady decline since the 1970s. In 1972, nearly 9% of the entire population attended one of these churches on a regular basis. In 2016, it was under 3%. According to predictions from the General Societal Survey, based on statistical trends, the average mainline church has 21 Easters to go before they shut their doors. 21 Easters to go before someone turns off the lights for the last time. Since 1998, the Wall Street Journal and NBC News have conducted a national survey on values. The results of the most recent one were released in August. There were a variety of concerns surveyed, including belief in God and the importance of religion. 2/3 of those over the age of 55 said belief in God and religion were very important. Less than 1/3 of those ages 18 to 38 said the same. This is an appreciable drop in only 2 decades. Surveys like these paint a grim picture. American congregations can easily get discouraged. But this is not the first time in history that God's people have faced challenges. Over 3,000 years ago, God brought the people of Israel to the edge of the Promised Land. The Israelites sent out a scouting party of 12 persons to investigate. The book of Numbers, especially chapters 13 and 14, tell of the report that was made after their return. The scouts agreed it was a wonderful land, a fruitful land, a land flowing with milk and honey. They even brought back evidence of what they had seen. But they disagreed as to what to do next. Caleb and Joshua believed that the Israelites should take God at his word and enter the land that God had promised to them. The other 10 said that was not possible. The land we traveled through and explored will devour anyone who goes to live there. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there, the descendants of Anak. Next to them, we felt like grasshoppers, and that's what they thought too. So they described the people of Canaan, another term for this promised land, as giants. And they said to themselves, we felt like grasshoppers, and that's what they thought too. Really paints a picture, doesn't it? Evidently, the Israelites had an image problem. They thought of themselves as grasshoppers. For them, the journey into Canaan was fraught with big, really big, and insurmountable obstacles. As a result, they did not make it into the promised land. God waited for a whole generation to pass away before giving them another chance. Having a false image can be quite debilitating. If we think we're giants, we're going to look down on people. And our self-importance is going to block all mercy and grace to and through us. On the other hand, if we feel like we're grasshoppers, we're going to be too afraid. Too afraid to risk anything for the cause of faith and the gospel. The truth is, we are neither grasshoppers nor giants. We are the beloved children of God. The tragedy of the story in Numbers is that the people had a false image of themselves. That false image was a form of rebellion against God. Churches often suffer from the same problem today. The first symptom of this rebellion is complaining. Numbers 14:2, and all the Israelites complained. They complained about being there. They complained about the problems. They complained about the leadership. And soon their complaints became an excuse for not going forward at all. Tom Rainer, author of Scrappy Church, says that many modern congregations major in complaining also. We can't compete with a mega church in our town. We can't reach young families. They all go to the big church that has all the children's and student stuff. We don't have the money or the people the other churches have. And then the complaints become excuses. We don't have enough resources. The people in our neighborhood would never be part of our church. We don't have the right leaders. Our facilities are in terrible shape. We're too small to make a difference. Rainer says, scrappy churches are churches that move from excuses to action. Scrappy churches are churches that move from excuses to action. They stop blaming others. They stop comparing themselves to other congregations. They deal with conflict in healthy ways. They become continuous lifelong learners. He also says that making this change is not easy. Those of you who were last Sunday, remember the story about changing the light bulb? Change is difficult. It may require major adjustments, but over time, the fruit will show. The second symptom of rebellion is a strong desire to go back. The Israelites said, wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? Let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt. In contrast, Caleb and Joshua wanted to go forward. They said, "And if the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It's a rich land flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord. Don't be afraid of the people of the land. They're only helpless prey to us. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them." Unfortunately, the desire to go back is still strong today. Question: what's the difference between the Amish and Presbyterians? Many of you are familiar with Amish, at least somewhat. There are many Amish in southern Michigan, northern Indiana. What's the difference between the Amish and Presbyterians? The answer is 100 years. That's the difference. You see, the Amish are a Christian sect stuck in the 1850s. Presbyterians are a Christian sect stuck in the 1950s. A difference of 100 years. To be fair, you could easily substitute a number of other American churches in place of Presbyterian. The 1950s and 60s were the golden years of American church life. With relatively little effort, pews were filled and Sunday schools were bursting at the seams. But the American landscape has changed. And today, according to the American Church Research Project, only 17.3% of the population actually attends church. If we want to reach that 82.7% of the population that is, for all practical purposes, outside the church, we can't return to the 1950s. We can't go back. We need to go forward. We need to be like Caleb and Joshua. Our highest desire must be to please God. And with confidence, we can continue forward on the journey of faith. Surveying the situation is important for any kind of expedition. It is helpful to know the challenges that will be faced, but perhaps the biggest challenge to face us is attitude. Lack of confidence has ended many an expedition. After surveying a mountain, climbers may decide not to climb that particular mountain. They may feel that the challenges are too great. They may conclude that the effort may not be worth the risk, that it is too dangerous. A guide was leading a group of people on a hike near some mountains. He pointed to a majestic-looking peak and said, This is perhaps the most popular peak for mountain climbers. Almost every day you'll see three or four groups attempt the peak. A woman asked, "How long does it take to get to the top of the mountain?" And the guide said, "Well, the ascent usually takes between 4 and 7 hours, depending on the abilities of the climbers." And then a man asked, "How long does it take to get down?" And the guide said, "Well, you can do it in about 20 seconds, but that's generally not recommended." After making a survey, a climber may decide not to climb the mountain, or may even decide to give up climbing altogether. And that's fine, because climbing mountains is an optional recreational adventure and not one of life's necessities. And this is where the analogy breaks down. For us, this is not an optional exercise. We may need to choose a different route. We may need to come up with different tools and resources, but this spiritual expedition, that is carrying out the mission of the Church of Jesus Christ, must continue if we are to be faithful to God. We need confidence. Our English word confidence is from a Latin expression meaning full reliance upon. And this is similar to how the New Testament uses the word confidence. Paul writes, "I am confident of this, that the one who began a good work among you will bring it to completion by the day of Jesus Christ." Philippians 1:6. The word here that's translated as confident is from a Greek term meaning reliance or trust based on the persuasion of truth. Reliance or trust based on the persuasion of truth. If you are persuaded that something is true and you act on that truth, then you are expressing confidence in the biblical sense of the word. Paul was persuaded of the truth of God as revealed in Jesus Christ and acted accordingly and urges us to do the same. Confidence. We need to trust God. We need to have a full reliance upon God. We need to believe that whatever God has begun in us, God will bring it to completion. Or, in other words, God's not done with us yet.